I've hit record, so don't say fuck.
Okay. Oh my fuck, what's happened?
Whoa, I was actually going to compliment you in the videos I've seen you in with your Lidl shirt game, Chris.
You know what, I only noticed the other day that the checkers on the Lidl shirt aren't actually square.
No, they're not. They're like, it's like a racing flag. Why have I got it here? I'm surrounded by Lidl's gear.
Like, they're all wobbly. I thought that was just like because of the way the fabric was laying, but no, that's the actual pattern.
I've also got the
shorts.
The shorts. Sponsored by Lidl. Like, the thing is, first of all, keeps the rain off my head. And I didn't come here for a fashion.
Very good.
Also, UN colors.
Yeah. Yeah, UN
colors. Blue hat is literally UN, isn't it?
Ooh, yeah, that's true.
But I mean, the thing is, like, I mean, that shirt cost me £2.50, and it's the most comfortable shirt I've ever worn. Like, 100% cotton, £2.50. Where else in the world can you get that? I mean, I don't even want to think about what kind of
sweatshop
that has come. But then, like, I mean, it's quality, so they must be whipping those kids pretty hard, right?
Oh, God. Well, we know you hate the Chinese, so hopefully you'll be hoping it's Chinese kids, I would imagine.
Well, every time Chris buys something, sees a little Made in China logo, he's like, not for me.
Right, okay. In case you hadn't guessed from the title of the video, if you're watching it, this is actually not about Chris's anti-Chinese sentiments or Lidl, but this is, it's called Space Virgins.
Space Virgins, the expanse in the pants.
Oh, just to check, none of us have had sex since the last one, right? Because
no,
obviously
definitely not.
No, okay. Obviously not. No, no.
Good,
no,
good,
no.
Good.
No, not at all.
No,
you know,
no.
It's like
no.
A big fight or whatever, you know. Right. So we're now talking about episode 3, Remember the Cant.
Mm-hmm.
Or is it actually called Remember the Canterbury?
It's Remember the Cant.
Episode is Remember the. Oh, right. Okay. Okay.
I think remember the can't.
Can't, yeah, yeah. It's the can't do attitude.
Oh, dear.
I don't know. The two things that immediately stick out to me are the beginning and the end. So, partly because, and I didn't even realize this until Drew sent it to me, was that the very final scene where Haverstock gets impaled, Havelock. Well, it's no point in learning his name now, is it?
You never know.
Because it could be space magic or something. I said in episode 1, like, it's not as bad as being impaled to a wall, and then Drew sent me I don't know, like, is it saying something? Is that like like a callback?
What, they put in the show a callback to this podcast?
Yeah,
no, of course. Yeah. Wow. I call back to episode
they were
one.
Clever in their writing. What amazing. I mean, we know they're good at planning, but wow. Yeah, so
they had
three
every
years
route
after the show finishes, three schmucks from the UK are going to make a podcast about this, and one of them is going to make an offhand comment, and then...
well, I mean, if that was the plan, it worked. The callback to episode one, where... the UN lady. Oh, that's my god! I need the list of names up. That's the one. I was talking to the.
Oh, you've been cheating by having them written down.
Wow!
I've been relying on my memory.
Actually, hang on a minute. I've got.
About Abbasinala having the OPA guy
on hooks.
Up on hooks. No, I don't.
I don't think no.
There's no direct thing. It's just.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Because I like when Drew pointed that out, I thought, oh, like that's a bit of poetry there, you know, like a little bit of like.
I think that's just because you said it's not as bad as being impaled.
Yeah,
impaled.
That made us both to think.
I mean, it is a belter an earther hanging a belter up, and then a belter hanging an earther up. So,
I think it kind of like
maybe it's intentional, but I don't, you know.
I think it's intentional because the thing is, whenever everything has a point, like in this show, right? There's not a missing.
That spike had a point.
Yeah, well, that's. but the thing as well that hit me, which you didn't point out at the time, which is interesting, was that the message got out. So
yeah, we didn't want to spoil you. Yeah.
So what I'm thinking is they didn't think the message got out. Now, it might have gone to Mars or it might have just got jammed, but I don't. So it appears that Mars are kind of none the wiser. They're as suspicious as anyone else.
They are obviously in the show, I think. Yeah, in this episode.
It makes it very clear that they are not the you know, wahahaha in all.
I wish we could get to episode 4 quicker. As Drew said,
part of the problem, and this might be a problem when we're talking, a lot of what happens in episode 4, I think, happens in episode 3. So if I mention anything that's actually
yeah,
4,
you gotta be careful. I mixed it up a bit. Yeah, episodes 3 and 4 are basically one big. All the places you visit, sort of thing. All the things that happen. They very much resolve each, you know, right away sort of thing. A lot of the things that have happened. Carry on.
So my sort of instinct is that this mysterious third party took the message and ran with it. Right? They managed to find a way to circumvent the jammers.
I think you're maybe reading a bit too much into that.
All Alex says is we are in range of their jammers.
I was very careful to use that wording when I pointed it out.
What's the name of the Martian ship? Sorry,
Doniger.
Yeah, the Doniger is probably only going to jam. I mean, militaries, they jam when they're in a combat situation, right? Or a delicate situation. So they might not have. They didn't really know what was going on, so they just might not have jammed. I think is what.
Yeah, I think that's the point. They were in range, but because and of course the reason Alex said that is because he was expecting them to jam it because everybody on the night thought the Doniger was coming to finish them off because
And
now we're finding out that the Martians, as you say, are just
if it had have been the Martians who'd done it all, then they would have had a reason to jam, but because they weren't, they might not have.
Yeah, so I think that kind of gives you the
while we're going back and answering questions, this is jumping around a bit, but there is a little bit where Abisarella says in relation to Ceres, she talks about that idiot governor of ours on Ceres. So Earth has a governor on Ceres, and that's probably that dude they went to speak to with the cactus and that. He's the UN's governor of. Yeah, and I think later on in the show, I think they mentioned that like Ceres is sort of de facto under UN control. But yes. I mean, it's occupied, you know, it's all else
there,
but yeah,
they talk about that in it's either episode 2 or 3. They talk about. And this is part of where they start building the incorrect conspiracy theory that we've had sort of deflated a bit in this one, is that they say that basically it is Mars that are doing it, helping the OPA, or the OPA are helping Mars, you know, some sort of collusion to take control of Ceres away from the UN. And really it's none of the answer turns out to be none of the above.
I'm expecting there to be a none of the above. Yeah, I mean, this is why I'm kind of thinking that there is an undisclosed third party at the moment, because whatever the thing was that destroyed the Canterbury, right? Like it could be anything, really, couldn't it? That's the core mystery to which this is all revolving around. So my default sort of instinct is, I don't know, like third party yet to be revealed. Probably, I'm guessing not aliens, but maybe. Like pirates, or the pirates, or the
well, the thing is, the stealth tech that we've seen that body party whatever using is very advanced and very expensive, which is why current, like, even Earth can't do it. Only Mars has got the logistics to do that. So it's not something that probably pirates could do. I mean, it could be pirates sponsored by, whatever.
Yeah, like something like that. Yeah, like it's not going to be
privateers rather than pirates.
Yeah.
Or a mercenary force of some variety, or something very. I don't know if a mercenary force would ever be that advanced.
Pirates rather than freebooters.
Yes. Right, so we've got Havelock. He goes in, and so is he using sex workers to learn Creole?
Yeah, I love that.
It's just one sex worker, so.
Yeah, I love that scene. I love when she's teaching him, he's learning. That just seemed, and I think the actress who portrays that sex worker, she's doing a great job. And I just love that scene. He's lovely.
That particular place is obviously like a bell to hang out, because like there's the guy that walks past him in the corridor, and they really like the shot really makes an effort to indicate that the guy is like he's a foot taller than Havelock. And Havelock.
And just like Vetinari from Discworld.
That's not gonna
help. Okay, never mind.
I think there's a Havelock in Dishonored.
But it's a Havelock, right? Okay.
Anyway. Sorry, carry on.
All right. To be honest, this is kind of like so when I'm watching RuPaul's Drag Race, right, you always know who's a hang on. This has a point. You okay. always know who's you often know who's about to get knocked out, because they'll put like a lot, they'll feature a lot in that particular episode, like a bit unusually. Their comments will be highlighted.
Yeah. Yeah.
They'll be like, and you go, all right.
I have no idea about this show.
I mean, it's a Google TV show where you meet a new character, you see how happy their home life is, you see them hanging out with their kids. You know, yeah. Like, yeah.
5 minutes away from retirement, you know.
Yeah, that kind of thing. Yeah, yeah, like I was getting,
just bought a new boat.
That kind of thing, yeah. They are, and then it goes, yeah, so Miller's. I don't know if Miller really does that much in this episode, does he? Because it seems like this focuses more on Mars than it does on Miller. Miller introduces himself to the sort of, I don't know, the criminal underworld element of the OPA, maybe?
Oh, right. Talking about that we meet Anderson Dawes for the first time.
Yeah.
He's like the OPA's boss on series.
Right, okay.
And one of the most powerful of all bosses in all the factions as well. He becomes he is very important to the whole OPA. And we revealed as well, sort of, I don't know if we're spoiler or not, but he is in it quite a lot, but he disappears at a certain point because they couldn't get the actor to keep coming back. He's just so
he's a great character.
Yeah, he's been in lots of stuff. We've talked about that before.
He had a very good
Jared Harris, Richard Harris's son.
And so it seems like I don't know how to sort of interpret the character a little bit, because he is a little bit like Mafia Don kind of union boss kind of guy. But at the same time, like, I mean, if he is representing the OPA with any kind of sincerity, he's obviously going to want to ease the tensions as much as anyone else,
isn't it? He says, "Don't deny the Martian crew, you know, water or whatever it was, some sort of resupply, because of that'll just reinforce the stereotype of the builders being savages,
My read on Dawes is." And you know, you'll form your own opinion, and I do think there's a lot open to interpretation. But my read on Dawes is he genuinely does care about the OPA's cause, about the Belters, and about their court, you know, about what they're trying to achieve. But he's a strategist, and he's willing to sacrifice people to see that through.
Yeah, that's sort of the read.
He will manipulate people. He will use people, but it is genuinely for the cause.
We see a lot of that. Yeah, I mean, he plays chess with people. Basically,
he takes risks
through other people.
He leans very like pragmatically, you know, like he'll
in a lot of ways. Yeah, he's pragmatic.
It can be
a bit ruthless and manipulative. I don't want to say too much, because you've only just met him for the first time, but you've seen a bit of that already. You've seen that sort of thing, and the way he talks to. This is a bit later on when he meets Miller and talks about Julie Mao. There's some really interesting little comments made in that conversation. And yes. I'm desperately trying to remember. There's one that comes to mind, and I'm thinking, shit, was that episode 3 or episode 4? I don't want to repeat it in case it's episode 4. But there's one thing he says particularly, and I think it might not have been said yet.
Because I'm watching the conversation now with subtitles, and I think he just dodges the question. He's just sort of like speaking.
But then he does. I think there comes a point where it's clear he knows Julie Mao and he knows what's going on. I think he dodges it to begin with, and then talks about his thing with Miller, because Miller, from his point of view, from Dawes's point of view, Miller is like a class traitor, right? He's like, you don't get it. He's like, his whole thing with Miller is, you don't get it. You don't get it.
Yeah, but not in, yeah, but like, yeah, like he's, I mean, he's like, yeah, like he treats Miller like the good cop, as it were, like, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he knows Miller's moderately reasonable.
Yeah.
I think at this point he sees Miller as a potential ally, but he's not sure.
Yeah.
And also maybe like a route in with the police as well.
Well, remember as well, there's more to that than just, you know, any sort of aha, maybe. The point is, remember that this is a private company that are the police.
Yeah, yeah.
Company.
I'm not going to say too much because definite episode 4 stuff. Or is it episode... No, Miller gets... No, a part of it happens already in episode 3, because Miller gets basically taken off the Julie Mao case. She's there's no point bothering about it then. Let somebody else deal with it. But that,
claim your tax-free bonus. Yeah,
enjoy your tax-free bonus. Yep.
I wonder how much it is. Does he? But anyway, he says he'll ask around and see what he can dig up. That seems to be where the conversation ends.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, like, I mean, it's Julie Mao, and he's a guy that knows people. Like, obviously, he's going to put two and two together, right? Like, he strikes me as the kind of guy that would have a hand in the in the dockyard simply to know the comings and goings of people, right? Like, that seems to be something.
Well, I think it goes further than that. I think, maybe it's not been made clear yet, but like the whole station is under Dawes's control, really.
Yeah,
like the governor is the governor, but Dawes runs the place, really. Yeah.
Is that in practice, or does he have a title?
Just in practice.
Is there much other Miller stuff other than
not really, no.
No, it's not that much Miller. It's a lot to do with the Miller stuff is basically introducing the Anderson Dawes and there's not a lot. There is the bit where he's supposed to be doing, you know, helping with like civil unrest.
Is it in 3 again? This is where 3 and 4, merge together for me. Is it in 3 where he finds Julie's contact?
I don't think so.
Somebody Beepco or whatever. Or is that 4?
That starts in this one, but it's not clear what's going on until the next one.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
You can put it together though, because in an early episode he was going through.
Oh yeah, if you remember little details, you might get it. But one of the dead bodies, one of the people that died in the riot at the end, I suppose that is another important Miller thing, is Julie's, you know, potential date or whatever the hell it was. You know, we don't know yet what it was, but what the real thing was. But they were on a dating service and it was like the only ones.
Yeah.
You know, it was like obviously some sort of cover for a contact.
Yeah.
I think this is, and this will become meaningful later, but on the earlier episode, when you see his dating profile, his little tag, because they all have little taglines, his little tagline is, I'll be your Sherpa.
All right, okay.
So just keep that in your mind.
There's a scene, you know the scene where Miller's at home and he's got his feet up?
Yeah.
The shot really focuses on his feet.
It does, it's a bit strange, though.
Yeah, it's a bit strange, a bit Tarantino-y, you know?
Are they bare feet?
Yeah, bare feet.
I'd probably look away for that then, because I'm foot phobic. Feet disgust me. I'm like,
I'm not into feet very much myself.
No, it's not. Yeah, like I didn't notice it because I'm into feet. I just like, but you know, like
loves feet, hates the Chinese.
Yeah,
Chinese feet. He's ambivalent.
Yeah, that's the middle ground. So we call those bastard feet. Right. So.
Sorry.
You're gonna get myself cancelled.
Oh God. Yeah. Well. Oh, it's a good thing I know the guy in charge. right. So, not because they're like. Oh my God. Okay, I'm gonna put the shovel down.
Yeah, it is a weird shot, and his feet are on the table, and he's on the couch, and it is shot in a very. It's different from most of the shots in the whole show, really. It's not the kind of, you don't really get that sort of casual. Mm. Sure, it is weird. I think it's just to emphasize Miller's personality in some way or something. I'm not really 100% sure where to go with that, but yeah.
If I was to guess, it's just the practical shot of fitting the TV, him, and his computer all in the same shot.
Yeah, maybe a way to achieve that shot. Yeah. So they had to use
maintain it like he's a chill dude and that's how he sits, kind of thing. That's part, you know, he's a laid back fella.
Sometimes. Most of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, one of the things that we do learn about Miller in this episode is his relationship with his workplace and sort of his immediate boss. So his sergeant, is it?
Captain.
Sorry, not a police. Captain. Line manager.
they are technically, they call them the police.
This is a thing from colonialism. There were private police. There were, you know, the
almost every police force in the world is based on colonial private policing.
Yeah.
It's all about protecting money. That's where it all started. And the
Pilkingtons back in the old West,
and, or you've got your peelers and all that as well,
and also like not quite the same thing, but like the East India Company, you know, that's that that kind of idea, you know, but privatized colonization.
Yeah, I think basically that this is probably like an easy sort of cheat code for them to create the solar system that they did. It's just to look at history. And see how humans treat, you know, environments and other people,
I think that's one thing the show is very good at. I mean, we've talked about it before, but like the show actually has a convincing economy and political economy. Like it makes sense. It makes sense that certain places have the materials, and you know, other places need to be controlled in certain ways. And
Well, that reminds me of the line that we get towards the end, where is, at Earth we had a garden and we paved it. And Mars,
I do love that line.
Yeah,
it's. That conversation.
Mars is trying to turn the desert into a garden or something.
It's part of. It's the way in which the writing of this show is good, because in that little exchange, you learn a lot about Holden. You learn a lot about that Martian. You learn a lot about like Mars's society and culture, and you get a lot in one little.
I thought it was the ambassador guy that's had that conversation.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, no, sorry. Yeah, I was thinking that was on the
topic.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, so that's, like you said, I think you've covered Miller more or less. Or the belt in general. Because probably worth mentioning that the... or is it? No, actually it's not that important. But the rabble-rouser guy who's always in the main concourse on the series station. He's the one who's sort of involved at that as well. So anyway, it's probably not that important. I've not screwed up anything. I didn't nearly spoil or something or anything. I just kind of thought, wait a minute, is there anything else to say about him? And then I realized, no, there isn't. So ignore me.
Since we got onto the Martian ambassador,
thread. Is important.
So, first of all, I'm struggling very hard not to call him Vandegraaff. That's what he is in my head.
Vandegraaff.
It's a physics man who the Vandegraaff generator. Yeah. That's what. Yeah. So that's overall. Anyway, Graaff.
He's got a sort of Dutch sound in the name anyway.
I hate him. I hate that character.
Do you?
I don't think you're supposed to, but I detest him. And when he gets fucked over, I'm like, yeah, fuck him over.
Why? Why do you not like him?
He's just the absolute epitome of like a career politician doing it for his own benefit, doesn't really care about what's going on,
well,
just
that
wants
to back
fucking
to bite him, doesn't it?
Well, yeah. And then when Avicerella plays him, I'm like, yeah, fucking stick him. Yeah.
I found him kind of like dull, really.
He is dull, but he just reminds me of, you know, just, yeah, the, you know, he's a Keir Starmer.
Well, I suppose he's a sort of governor of a former colony sort of person and stuff, isn't he? He's got that vibe.
Yeah.
But he was, he's what he was, just for the audience, he's, what we're talking about now is a new character who's the ambassador from the UN to Mars.
He strikes me as like the kind of like, he's the kind of person that would vote Remain because he wants it to be easy to get to his second house in Spain. You know, like that sort of like...
Yeah, exactly.
You know, he's like...
It's not like he talks about the Martian culture or something as if it's something he likes. It's like he's got property there. I can kind of see what you mean there, Drew, to some extent. He doesn't really...
I think it's a bit... I mean, it's definitely quite irrational, but yeah, just I despise him. But unreasonably so,
Yeah, but he is very aristocratic in his sort of vibe.
He does have the governor of a former colony or something, or the former governor of a colony or something. That sort of thing.
Also, this is just a little detail, but when Avicerella invites him over for the dinner party, first of all, I love that dinner party. It is just, it's exactly how tedious a middle-class dinner party is. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's horrible.
It is uncomfortable, yeah.
But when she invites him over, she's trying to convince him to come over, and she says, Arjun, presumably her husband, Arjun is making flan. Like, do you tempt people to dinner parties by saying there's flan? Like, I enjoy
Americans,
flan.
Americans seem to hold flan in a lot higher esteem than we do.
When Americans say flan, they mean like a fruit.
No, I think flan. They mean a real flan.
If I think flan, I think quiche.
Yeah, basically. Oh, maybe, yeah.
But maybe she meant a fruit, a fleck of pudding.
No, that's good. Yeah. The other reference I can think of to flan, because they also try and say it in a flan.
It's flan,
as if it's
got
an accent over the A, which it hasn't. flan.
Well, they do that with like Mario and pasta, and they lengthen A's a lot.
Yeah, to make it sound more posh.
More European.
Definitely.
Anyway, I've lost the thing of things because now I'm thinking about flan.
But no, I only noticed it this time. But it's like, we've got caviar or we've got lobster, not we've got flan. That's what it's anyway.
Depends what you like, I suppose. Maybe he likes their flan.
I mean, I love flan, but
maybe he's got a history of liking the flan that's made by Arjun.
maybe they think they're just like slumming it with flan. You're a bit tired of the lobsters and caviar.
Gotta eat poor people food. We've got real eggs.
Yeah, it's and they talk about wine.
Well,
and you look at the
little
like...
detail from the actual time of the dinner party, where they say, and actually the writer points out that this is one of the things that makes the writing and the dialogue so good, is they don't just throw a generic line in. When they have a generic line to flesh out, like when the governor's partner guy and Arjun are going to go off and do something. Obviously, I'm going to reveal what it is to the audience in a second, what they go off and do. But it's basically to get rid of them and let the others talk business.
Yeah.
And it could have been anything. And he does, what he wants to do is play darts. But the way he puts it is, I've just put new points or just sharpened the points in the darts. Let's go play cricket.
Yeah.
So he talks about a game of darts, but a very specific game of, you know, a specific variation. Mm-hmm. It doesn't just throw a generic thing out there. Like, you know,
First time I watched it, that surprised me. Because, first of all, it's an American show. And usually when darts is depicted on an American show, they think the point is to hit the ball.
Yeah.
Like, they think it's like archery. It's like archery or something. Yeah. It's just whoever gets the closest to the ball. Like, they don't know darts. They don't know the rules of darts. And not only did the writers of this know the rules of darts, but also know that there are variants.
Invariants, yep.
Mm-hmm. So I read that as...
giving it a bit more character, you know?
I read that as like cricket meaning do you fancy a game, you know, like just
right. No, I've seen it in pubs and that back in the day, like you'd like to be the cricket scoring and then the normal scoring kind of thing.
Yeah, okay, yeah. The scoring darts, you know, and you get, you know, you've got your round the board and the point is instead of just making it a dull line, they lift that even that little excuse to go away, they sort of make it a little back and forth where it doesn't go, you want to play darts, and then walk off. It's, you know, they give it a
or even worse, like what most shows would do, we should just go and give them time to talk. More like how it would play in real life.
Yeah, so this is more, it's like, I can't remember if it's sharpened or replaced the points or whatever on the darts. You know, do you want to do that? Yeah, let's go. You know, and it's a bit, it's more organic. It makes more, you know, it's just better.
Do you know what? I misread that line every time I've watched it. It's only just you saying this that's revealed. Because he says, I think the words are, I've put new points on the darts. And I thought he meant he'd put like a new point system for scoring.
Oh, right.
But no, he means he put points on the new point.
Yeah, the darts. Fresh.
Doesn't matter. But,
darts. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't matter. It's all just, but it's all a little bit of detail to make it realistic.
And it's
something that the in that podcast where the writer and one of the actors talk, Ty and that guy, he picks on that line and says, like, because I don't think they wrote it. I think that was like a generic thing, you know, from the screenplay of the book. That they sort of said, right, you know, and then the writer's room put some details into certain things. And he says, this is one of the great things about, you know, the writing team is like, they won't just fall back on a simple thing. They'll make it.
But it also makes sense because Avicerella's husband's British, isn't he?
Yeah.
So he would know. He would know about,
Yeah, that's the point. So yeah, there's more to it there as well. Yeah, there's a lot more. And
he's also multinational. Before we move on, he's also Dr. Bashir's dad.
Yes, he's in loads of stuff.
I recognize him.
He's in Seinfeld at some point as well. And he's like sort of rent a British Asian, British South Asian guy for a lot of American stuff. Yeah.
There's a lovely scene, I won't spoil, but there's a lovely scene with him and Avicerella later on where they're talking on a view screen. I won't say any more. I love that. Mm-hmm.
They also talk about the hydroponics grey water wine, which I imagine, although it's probably a bit of flavour, maybe sort of mirrors what Mars are trying to do. Like they're trying to be sort of sustainable by recycling their own.
Yeah, they're trying to get away from any reliance on the belt or Earth. They're trying to be their own, or the UN. They're trying to be their own. Yeah,
Which is what Mars are trying to do. So it's a little microcosm in, you know.
And also, it tells you more than that, because the fact that there are vineyards on Mars tells you that, you know, they've got beyond just basic survival.
Is this on Mars?
Yeah.
The vineyard.
Oh,
because De Graaf wants to retire to Mars. He loves Mars. He wants to go and live there in his vineyard. Yeah.
So
the impact of what happens later in the episode is you know, is so big.
And it makes the line meaningful because Avicerella says something, because he's going, the Martians wouldn't do that. The Martians are nice, they're good.
Yeah.
And she says, I think you love them too much. And she punishes him. She's right. He's leaking. I mean, basically, he's a traitor. Like, I don't care. Mm. But, you know, He's a traitor to the UN in that he's leaking information to the Martians. So she tells him what's coming.
That's true, I suppose. Yeah.
And then she punishes him for it.
Yeah, there is some truth to that. It's a two. He brought he brings it on himself, in a way. So for anybody that's watching this and hasn't watched the show or doesn't want to.
I mean, first of all, go watch the fucking show.
Yeah, go watch the fucking show.
Yeah.
What are you doing listening to? Fucking watch it. No.
Watch it. You can do both.
Yeah.
Twice as good.
Yeah, keep watching. But basically what happens is she tells him things that the UN suspects. Although, not that this is the interesting thing about Avicerella. She doesn't actually believe this, I don't think.
I don't think
she thinks that from the start.
But to make it clear, she tells him Mars is selling or whatever the stealth composites to a third party.
To the OPA. She gives away the information that they caught that OPA courier with stealth technology composites. Stealth technology. And what happens is he goes back to the, through diplomatic channels, he tries to find out if this is true or not, that they're connected to Mars. And the Martians go, shit, what? Are we missing any of this? So it unravels almost every conspiracy theory that we've had up to now, just completely unravels in this episode.
Yeah.
And I love that that shows you, I think this is the point where I started to turn around on Abbasarella. Because like I said, in the first scene of the show, pretty much, she's torturing somebody. I'm like, she's a villain. I hate her. And then this episode, you're like, oh, she is fucking smart. Like, she is. She's got political instincts, and she's also got political, like, strategy. She can, you know, she pulled the strings, and she got the exact result she wanted.
Yeah, I think that's why she likes being sort of third in command as well. She's answerable up the way to the one guy who can't control her and the actual boss.
Yeah.
And other, another one that she does what she wants. So basically, he gives away information to the Martians. About what the military on the UN are thinking, basically, what the undersecretary is thinking, is that the Martians have given stealth tech to the OPA. That's what they think. So then the Martians go, shit, we haven't been doing that, but we better check our stocks of stealth technology. And so this reveals that there's like 9 sites on Mars where they have stealth technology things, not just 6 or whatever they previously.
And I like that in that moment, somebody goes, oh, there was one we didn't know about.
Yeah, something like that. No, we didn't know about it. Yeah, I thought there was only 6. No, there's 9. We didn't know about it. So she's helped her own. She's given herself some credit with the UN board, you know, with the military leaders and the political leaders by getting this information out of Mars for them. She's also calmed a bit of tension by showing that Mars was as unaware as they were of where it's coming from, although they obviously thought, well, we make the stuff, it must have been stolen from us then. So she's given a lot to Mars as well in that respect.
Yeah.
And she also...
Well, at the beginning of the show... Sorry, no, I'll finish here.
No, I was just going to one thing. I was just going to say one more thing, and as Drew pointed out, she sort of... She warned the ambassador guy and he got his payback for not listening, really, or not trusting her, I suppose. You know, he could have done much. I think, I mean, it's like you say, Abbasarella basically pulled his strings and he did the only thing he really could have done there, other than shutting up. He could have either shut up about it or, you know, told the Martians things. And as you say, he's a British ambassador. He's the British ambassador. He's the UN ambassador to Mars, so he should really...
The British ambassador to China.
Yeah, he's the British ambassador. we'll start on about Hong Kong next, you know.
So earlier in the show, Abbasarella is pushing for military action, and I like this scene because it's the Admiral, I forget his name, I like him, it's the Admiral that's... saying, you know, caution, you know, let's not, but it's my soldiers that are going to die, let's not. I think that's something that's quite true to life. I think generally it is the generals and the admirals who are more reluctant to go to war than, you know, like the State Department and the politicians, because they get the bump from it. I don't think that's usually on screen. You get the opposite. It's always the generals pushing for war, because, you know, which I don't think is generally accurate, and this show is a bit smarter than that, and I like that.
A bit like In the Loop. We were talking about In the Loop, weren't we? The military and the level-headed politicians are trying to avoid a war. Mm. The sort of gung-ho politician who's never been involved in the military in reality, but is all obsessed with it, all matches and nonsense, is the one that's pushing for it, you know.
Got to climb the mountain of conflict.
that's a big line from that show. It defuses a lot of things, but it also gives you the question of, like, okay, we don't know where they got the stuff from. Mars is the only place it makes it, so we're thinking now, well, they've stolen it, or somebody has stolen it and, you know, traded it to whoever's running this. Well, they still think it's the OPA, and Mars still think it's the OPA, as we know from the scenes on the Donna Job.
Yeah. But the thing is with the OPA is them being a like an ununified force of sorts, you can't really confirm or deny without really knowing exactly what's going on. Because you investigate this bit of the OPA, but that might fundamentally, other than some loose contract, be completely independent from another part.
No, exactly. So, yeah.
Yeah. So but, the OPA, so it, although it's one, you know, one flag, one generalized group for the belt, there isn't. It's not their actual government. It's not.
Yeah.
It's not even their union. You know, it's yeah. not anything official, and that's yeah, that's what makes it difficult yeah. to pin it on anybody. Yeah. But that's so why the OPA are a good scapegoat as well.
Yeah, because if Earth sort of put their cards on the table and declare their innocence, and Mars put their cards on the table and declare their innocence, then the scapegoat then becomes rather quite obvious, because the OPA can't do that, right? The OPA can't sort of come together and say, here's our cards. Yeah. They can't.
Yeah.
So
that, what you're saying about the OPA. The OPA being a loose organization of factions, that does become, I don't think this is spoilery, that becomes a theme of the show, like whether do we need to come together and become, you know, a state, or if we do that, do we lose what we are, or, yeah.
It's not even a spoiler in as much as we've already seen that if you look at the influence Anderson Dawes has in this episode, he's not unkind to the Martians or even to the Belters. He doesn't do what some of the bosses would come and smack people around everything. He's very, very diplomatic and comes and says, look, no, these guys are these guys are just normal. Like, it's more of a class thing for him, I think.
In many ways, like he is similar to a general insofar that like he doesn't necessarily, you know, he wants peace, because if it's not peace, it's on his, you know, it's bad for everyone, right? Yeah, like, it's certainly bad for him.
It's more complex for the Belters, the OPA, because they're on the back foot. They are the weakest faction, so they might want, you know, they want a way of, you know, getting respect, as you know.
They want a place at the table, as it were.
I think that's about
difficult to do because they're not unified. So whoever goes to the table for them, some of them are going to go.
But then if they do unify, then you know, do they lose what they are? That's the sort of tension within the OPA, I think.
Yeah, because as you said, you know, the even within the belt, they're all going to be saying we're Belters, and you know, the inners are the bad guys. But once the inners aren't in the picture. Then it's, well, I'm from Ceres and you're from Ganymede Station, you know, Ganymede Station or whatever. And, you know, there is a sort of, I mean, it's a very wide area of space that they cover.
Yeah.
You know.
There's a clannishness.
Yeah, sort of clans. That's a good way to put it. Yeah, sort of clans. There's sort of clans of within the OPA and the factions.
So like the Ashlanders in Morrowind?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, very much so, yeah.
Okay, that makes sense.
And smiles.
You're missing out.
So we now know from that point that, you know, I can't remember where it is in terms of the show when we first find out that the Martians are like just as confused as everybody else. Because I think that's the point where it's confirmed. But also we discover that so we're back to the Doniger then, I suppose. Is that okay to go there?
Mm-hmm. Oh, there's one side note. I don't know if it's relevant. So during the final speech between the ambassador and Avasaralis, which was a very interesting conversation, but I think now that we've sort of talked it through, the ambassador guy does seem like quite a piece of work in a lot of ways.
He's not evil. He's just
selfish,
functionary.
He's
just kid's karma.
More about himself than anything else.
Yeah. I mean, he speaks very well. Like, you know, like I like the idea. Like the idea. I suppose from the audience point of view is that like Mars is an exciting project or frontier or thing. So we off the bat, like we have this natural curiosity about what they're doing on Mars and so we're sort of untainted by like prejudices against them that, you know, Cold War style, right? Mm-hmm. So we as the audience would naturally sort of like connect with this guy, but then again it's like he sort of appears to be sort of come at it from the bourgeois perspective. And one thing I noticed that it's a small detail, but it's a detail that they did on purpose, which is when Avasaralis gives him Avasarala.
Like, have a banana.
Have a banana.
Avasarala.
She gives him a bottle of wine, but it's in like a tube, like a case, which presumably is like, well, that's a very old bottle of wine. They obviously put it in that sort of case to protect it, right?
Yeah, they mentioned something about it. I can't remember what it was.
Yeah, I don't know. I just found that kind of like
some sort of bottle of drink. I don't think it was wine either. But anyway, carry on.
Okay, I don't know, gin or something. But they were talking about wine earlier, so I sort of assumed that he's a wine guy. And yeah, she like gave him a very expensive bottle of wine as a present. But like, I just found that the detail of her put it being in the tube, like rather than just handing over.
Yeah, so it shows it wasn't just something she's grabbed out of odd bins.
Yeah, yeah, nice little detail. And then he accuses Avasarala of basically wanting to win at all costs, which does seem a little, I don't know, like it seems a little bit like a bit of a just twisting the knife a bit, you know?
Well, I mean, they talk about that when she was like a teenager or a child or whatever.
A child,
He's like, known her since she was a child because he was like one of her big brother's friends or something by the sounds of it.
Something like that.
I think her dad's friend. Because he said something about
playing cards with
that's
dad.
What you like, yeah. You win at any costs, and that's what got your dad killed or something,
yeah,
something along
yeah,
those lines.
So yeah, I say that. I don't think that's ever explored, really, is it?
No, I don't think so. But yeah, I mean, I think it's, I mean, it's that accusation. I think, you know, he's right. Like, she is, again, like Dawes, she's ruthless. But in order to be a leader, it really depends. Wait, like, are you doing good things or are you doing bad? Like, if you're ruthless,
yeah.
Evil,
motivation and intention rather than action that matters with her.
Yeah. But also,
and
that's like,
you know, and she is trying to avoid escalation, so you know she used them, but you know she gave
the implication of you'll do anything. The implication of you'll do anything to win is that she particularly cared about him. I would have liked her to have responded to that by saying, "Well, I don't really particularly care about you."
This is because you've got this irrational hatred of the guy. You know, was the actor in something else where he played a bad guy that you really didn't like? Or there is a sort of post. Scene with Avasarala, when he does that.
Yeah.
And he goes off and
Mars time?
Pardon?
Is it Mars time?
The Doniger, go on to the Doniger, yeah. So the Doniger's picked up the crew of the night.
Mm-hmm.
And they... No, this is where... some interesting things happen in this one. And this is where we start to see what the Martian plan on the hoof, anyway, is. Because they didn't know anything else, and they've picked up these five people. They now know they've got an ex-Martian military, an ex-Earth military, and they seem to know his record as well.
Although I mean, is that quite possible through like a truce rather than through espionage?
Possibly, but I mean,
I assume some of it is just going to be public information.
Yeah, some of it must be.
Yeah, or like, because it's like, because
is where you find out more about Holden and his family as well. They talk about, is it five mothers and four fathers or vice versa?
Yeah, it's like eight parents or something,
sort of like Agent 47. But that's... he's a genetic super soldier. And so, but anyway, one of the things I noticed from the Mars shots was the camera panning is like there's a theme of camera panning on the Mars ship. What's it called again?
The Doniger.
Where like it's like an angle and then it fades like an orbit. It's like an orbital. It's like it. So it sort of gives the portrayal that it's through space because it just goes up and up and sort of off to a diagonal. I find that to be really kind of like, I don't know, really like. Adds to the atmosphere because it's like, well, they're in space on a ship, so there's obviously that, but also like it feeds into that disorientation of not knowing where you are, what's going to happen,
what
their intentions.
Yeah, it does have that sort of. I know what you mean. Yeah, it gives. It, well, they're the five members of the night crew are on the back foot, thinking that These people are just they initially think they're trying to cover up, because it doesn't Holden say, one of the first things he says is, yeah, that's it, destroy the evidence or something like that.
They're
about to
so
be...
at that point they are 100% convinced that it was the Martians that did it,
and they're going to be killed by the Martians, and the evidence is going to be covered up as much as possible. But then the Martians keep them, and one by one, and interrogate them one by one.
I love the interrogation scenes and the post-interrogation scenes, because we learn so much about the characters again in such like an organic way.
I love when
I can't remember who says to Shed, well, they told us that you faked your medical license and you're on the run from a drug dealer, and Shed said just like.
Shed is very, very funny in this episode.
It's funny, some funny lines.
The first thing he says when he comes into the room, because after the post interrogation, they put them all into one cell again together, or one ante room of the ship, and it's like, Alex has got the MCRN uniform on, and Shed says, you could. We can join up. That's an option.
That's an option.
Because they say, what did you tell him? I told him nothing. He says, I told him everything, even stuff. I just made stuff up. It was like, I just didn't want to, He's totally...
But I think, and it also, the Martian's plan is working perfectly. Keep them separate, interrogate them, tell them stuff about each other, then put them in a room and listen to what do they say to each other. Because, that's how you're going to learn whether they're guilty or not. I think it's Holden who's on to. It's like, they're listening to us. There's no other reason to let us talk to each other.
Well, if you're a prisoner on a ship, you kind of got to sort of assume that you're under constant surveillance. They're not going to just let you hang out in the lounge, are they?
I don't know if I'd be that smart. I don't think I would.
Depends on what you're used to. These aren't people that are... Well, okay, two of them are used to military vessels, but the other three, Shed's not.
No.
And, as far as... From what we can tell, that from... Amos and I'm forgetting the names.
Holden.
I can't remember who we're missing.
The lady,
Naomi.
Naomi, thank you. Amos and Naomi. They seem to be civilians as well, as same with Shed. As far as we know, they're all just civilian type people. The techie merchant navy types. So would they think about things like surveillance? I don't know.
I think Holden would. Holden would, and Amos, if he's got his head screwed on in the moment.
Yeah, Amos, if he's in the right mood, he does think quite deeply about these things. Yeah. So.
Yeah, and also,
quite angry with the
Martians. Just going funny lines. There's an Amos line that cracks me up every time I watch it, where I think it's Alex who says you ever heard of a sleeper agent? They're talking about Naomi. You ever heard of a sleeper agent? And then he just grabs Alex and says, you ever heard of a human shield? Every time. I love it.
It's just like, grabs Alex, says, let him come in the door. He'll take the first bullets.
So with the interrogation scene, there's obviously a reason behind the pill that the guy takes.
This is quite often misinterpreted. I'm not saying, I'm so super smart. I'm just saying I got it right away. I understood what it was just from the way they show it. Some people thought...
So his eyes?
Yeah, some people thought it was meant to be some sort of mind-reading pill or something, but it's not. It's just like a hyper-focused drug.
Yeah. So in a present-day context, it'd be like, amphetamines or something, right?
He's trained to look at expressions and all that sort of stuff already, but this is like hyper focus, which is why then the camera will look at somebody's eye when he asks a question and stuff like that, is to show that he's really focused on
they show his pupils just go tiny details. Can I just say, I love his eyebrows. He's got the most unruly eyebrows, and I'm so glad they didn't tidy them up for TV. They're all over the place and they're beautiful.
But his hair's not unruly, his hair's like pristine. I can't even get it. My hair's far too unruly for anything close to that. Every now and then I'll try, and it's just like, no, it's just no. I figured, because the thing is, I figured with the pill, like it wasn't going to be mind reading, because this is rooted in real.
This is much more. Yeah, the show science. Is a much more realistic vibe.
So I don't know if the thing is, I kind of like. gave up guessing in a way because it didn't.
I think the scene makes it. I assume you assumed it was just like it focuses him. It gives it makes him more.
I'm just assuming you got that.
I figured we'd find out later. To be honest,
I don't think they mention it anymore.
I think there's an offhand line much later where somebody goes, like, I don't need perception drugs to see that, or something like that.
Somebody puts that into they give you a hint what it is. But yeah, it's just drugs to help them focus. Yeah.
He takes it, and it's like it happens straight away. That's not what happens when you take drugs.
Maybe it is.
Depends on the drug. I'd love an alternate. An alternate version of this scene where he just starts smoking a bong.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
He's got a needle.
What were we talking about? I'm sorry.
Yeah. Like a bong would be a much better way.
So the point is that as Drew points out, what he does is he gets to each of them, talks to them about themselves, and tells them bits and pieces about each other. And the whole point of it is, as we discover towards the end of it, when he speaks to the captain finally. The whole point of it is that they've worked out, once they've spoken to these five people, they've thought, right, okay, we've got this OPA-ish person. There's no real proof that she is OPA or anything, but she is a belter and she's a bit.
I mean, they do a great job, though. Like, in that situation, I would be suspicious of her because these are people, like, they've not had a ton of time together, but they're friends at this point. They've gone through something together.
Yeah.
And to make them suspicious of each other and antagonistic to each other, like, that would realistically do it, I think. Yeah.
Especially when. Yeah. So what they want to do, for the audience of this video, what the Martian leadership on the ship have decided is like, right, okay, this isn't any predetermined thing. It's obvious now that they've not thought about this beforehand, but now they've got these five people and they've spoke to them. They start to see that they can make a scapegoat out of Naomi. And so what they do is they say, right, Naomi isn't responsible for this thing. And they don't really care if it's true or not. They just want
I don't think they know either way. They think it's the OPA. They think it's probably the OPA. And we've got somebody who, fits the bill here. But their concern is avoiding hostilities with Earth.
Yeah, and so they think it doesn't matter if it's true or not, as long as it keeps us...
Mm.
You know, if the story can fall apart in a week, once we've had time to speak to various people and communicate all this, but now we need this, and this, so she then tries to put the wedge in even further, and get hold and to sort of outright blame her, you know, which is going to be difficult to sell because he's already outright blamed Mars. Well, insinuated.
No, he didn't. He said if Martian we're dead,
and they've proof of Martian involvement or whatever. Yeah, so basically it's that level of confusion is fine from the Martian captain's point of view as well. So it doesn't matter if it's confusion, mixed messages, contradiction. She just wants time. She doesn't care about the truth or justice. Bringing Naomi to justice, if it is her or whatever, that's irrelevant. It's all about getting a bit of breathing space for her to speak to her superiors and try and sort out what's happening. That's essentially what I get out from that. So they didn't plan this all in advance. They didn't have a grand plan to blame Naomi. It was just like once they got these five people and they seen how they can manipulate them, their intelligence guy gives her a plan that they can use, and a patsy.
I think that's exactly.
Yeah, it. It makes sense when Holden goes to the captain, they sort of ask him, look, because Holden's message was effectively. If we die, it's the it's the Martians. if we die, it's the Martians.
You just go with Chinese at this point. It's funnier.
I just see them as an analogy. I see that.
I absolutely see that. Yeah, I'm with you.
Well, there's a lot of Asian people in the Martians.
Yeah, but you're okay with that, Chris.
I'll work through it.
Yeah, there's a lot of East Asians coming up, mate.
Okay, yeah. So Holden goes to chat with the captain after the human shield event.
Yeah.
And he insinuates that it's Mars, but he says basically if we die, then it's Mars that have killed us. We're about to be picked up by Mars.
Well, that's who was picking them up. So they had found the Martian technology, and that's who's going to pick them up. So that was a gamble as well, I think.
We've got the whole belt is stirred up because the whole belt has received the news that the Martians destroyed the Canterbury.
Which,
but from the belter point of view, they don't really care. We've not had the term Inyolodo yet, have we? But I like the term. The belter term for the inner people is Inyolodo. They're Beltaloda, and the inners are Inyoloda.
People,
okay. But like Doc Loader. Yeah. So from the Beltas' point of view, they don't really see a distinction between Earth and Mars. They're all Inyoloda. So if Mars did it, they'll be as angry at Earth as they are at Mars. Like it's one. They see those as one.
It's their survival that's been put at risk. A crew of people who work out of the belt. You know, it's a Belter crew for the most part that they've seen has been.
Yeah,
being killed,
I think this kind of came up a little bit in previous episodes when we were talking, but like the fact that a lot of the people on the Cant and the Knight aren't necessarily from the belt, I don't think it matters because they are belt, they live in the belt, so they're belt, you know, they're immigrants to the belt.
So that's
it's an immigrant, it, you know, it's an immigrant society.
Yeah, there's no humans being,
So there is much, you know, as far as the belt's concerned, there is much belters as anyone, kind of thing, in that context at least.
Yeah.
And you find quite a few main characters that have that. What's the word? Distinction, that status. Mm-hmm. That's something.
What one of them has a flat because we were talking about how many flashbacks there are, and one of them has a flashback that we forgot about when we were talking about that.
What was that?
A flashback.
The butcher.
Oh, that. Yeah. Later on, yeah.
The butcher.
No.
You're not. Else.
Don't
worry about it.
Forget that from there. I think Chris thought. That's kind of what I was thinking about. But there are other characters as well that have a status, you know, that's because obviously the crew of the Canterbury. No, I'm not going to say. I was going to say something about a bit of graffiti, but it might not happen until 4. So because that message about the Canterbury thing starts in 2. And and we find out it's got out in 3, and then in 4 it's news, you know, by that point. There's quite a lot of small but interesting consequences to that, other than the big political and social ones that we've seen. You know, there's a few little small details. But anyway, sorry, I digress because it could be something from next episode.
Right.
Sorry.
Yeah, but I don't know. I think that is that's sort of where Mars sort of leaves off, isn't it? Where Holden gets.
Well, there is something else worth mentioning.
Mm-hmm.
And this was part of what they used to reinforce the story about Naomi, is that there's a ship burning hard, following the Doniger. The Doniger, one of the two. It's either following them or it's burning towards them.
It's decelerating.
Decelerating.
It's an odd thing to say when you're like, but decelerating towards, yeah.
Yeah.
It looks like it's aiming to be near the Doniger.
Yeah, it's heading.
Not going.
Yeah, the ship is heading to the Doniger, but
the deceleration part. Because this took me a moment to get my head around when I first watched it. Because this is all like realistic physics stuff.
Yeah.
So they would be going towards, you know, imagine a rocket, they're going towards them and then they're very fast, so they need to slow down, so they point backwards, they're accelerating away from them to slow down towards them.
Yeah.
So they're seeing the drive plume.
So they see the drive plume.
And they
claim one of, you know, they make it up. This is a better way of putting it, I suppose, but they claim part of the story is Naomi sent a signal to them. You know, and that's why they think.
I think they believe that. I think they believe that at the moment. Not necessarily 100%, but I think that they think that's probably what's going on.
Yeah, so they think that this is an OPA ship heading towards the Doniger. And then we flick back to the station, and Dip Miller's partner in series. He gets the point.
So the big cliffhanger is basically, maybe are we hoping to see the reveal of this mystery ship that probably blew up the Canterbury?
Maybe
in episode. Maybe.
There's one thing we skipped past that I thought you would enjoy, Chris. But we get our first introduction to Space Mormons.
Oh yeah. The Space Mormons. Yeah. Now, yeah. It totally stands to reason.
That other big thing about the Space Mormons hasn't happened yet, has it?
No.
There's nothing. Yeah, they're important. They're one of the few big religions that's sort of ventured to the belt.
Actually, no, have we seen... No, never mind. I can't remember when that is. Never mind.
Yeah, okay. I didn't want to mix anything up.
It's a bit involving sensors that I thought we'd already had.
You might.
I don't.
Yeah,
I think we can't have. We can't have.
No, we might.
Have we met that character yet?
I don't think we have. No, let's. Yeah, I'm getting. Yeah, we'll I'm getting a bit confused myself. So let's not say. Yeah. Let's not risk any spoilers. Because.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I should have apologized at the start of this episode. Actually, I might remember that now. I should have apologized for giving away last time that Alex is Martian. When we didn't actually know,
you keep apologizing for that, and it was me. Yeah. I did it in episode one. You're off.
Right,
you're
okay.
It didn't spoil anything. It wasn't. I didn't see that as a grand reveal.
I think the characters learning it is of significance because they didn't know.
Yeah,
but
especially
when you
see him in uniform as well. You know?
Yeah,
because I mean, for me, I didn't assume they were from any. Do you know what I mean?
They're all. It's just what we were saying. They're effectively builders because they're all outsiders to the place they come from.
It's like, and his mum was called Joanne. You spoiled it for me.
I like, this is the first time that we learn Holden had eight or however many parents. And he plays it off like all his mothers were equally important to him, which is him trying to. Can see again. This will
but
come
he knows
later.
But which that's, one was the one that
that's,
gave
that's
him carrying,
feeling yeah. something? Yeah, but also we don't learn the reason why he's got eight parents yet. And when you learn the reason for that, it's great.
The Martian guy says it's a tax dodge.
Right, so we get a hint.
That's
not quite what it is, but he's
barking in the right direction. So
I mean.
Because that's a very sci-fi thing, having you know somebody who is a genetic mix of eight people, but they give a very almost like present day reason for it being the case, which I like that they tie that.
Yeah, yeah.
It mentions two things that are a clue to what the reason sort of is, and they say, "Oh, you were a tax break then," but he also mentions that they've got a very large plot of land, which is unusual at this point in time on Earth.
Yeah,
you
know, my assumption is something along the lines of there's either a shortage or a overabundance of people, and so people who want to have children, rather than just doing it the way that today or the normal way, I don't think it's a common thing.
Then I think they did is it like
okay, so because I was assuming like if you want to have a child, but there's like every child come, you have to pay tax to disincentivize population growth or whatever.
I don't think it's something you could guess at this point.
Yeah, I don't think
it's very prosaic. It's not a big deal.
It really isn't.
It's a banal thing, but it's the banality that makes it like this weird sci-fi thing for a very banal reason.
They're trialing new genetic technologies.
I mean, we could tell you because it's not like a plot point or anything. We could tell you. It's basically to secure generational land rights to a piece of property.
So
they've got much bigger land area in their personal ownership than they would have under normal circumstances because of the current social situation as you say, there's too many people or too little land or whatever. Mm. So what they do is they become one family. And they have this child, and now all of them, together now own more land than a normal family would be able to have. So they've got this. It's essentially it's to save a farm, I suppose. Is what
and rather than so, presumably, what would have happened otherwise is when they all died, that land would have got parceled off to other families or whatever. Yeah. Whereas Holden can keep all of that land because he can say, "Oh, all of this land belonged to my parents."
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's not a great big plot point, but it does get mentioned in terms of character building a few times. Because Abba Sirala later on has an interaction with the
family. Oh, yeah, no, I hadn't really thought, but it's incredibly important to Holden's character, isn't it?
And there's also what the Martian tries to put on him is he's just a convenience for these people.
I love his offhand response to that is, that's not how they saw it.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, when his parents presumably get old and die, like he's got the king of inheritance sort of there waiting for him.
Yeah.
Like, so he's kind of like, so he I don't know what he's doing now, and I suppose it's not entirely important in that particular...
Yeah, why he's doing what he's doing now is sort of connected to that. But not in a way. It makes more sense when you get the little backstory bits. You know, again, it's not like a big plot point or anything we're spoiling, but it does tell you a lot more about Holden, and I think it's better if you discover it in the organic way rather than us trying to explain it really.
Okay. But no, it's sort of interesting. Yeah, I mean, it sort of starting off with the breadcrumb and. Seeing where it goes.
So just recap what we learned from the interrogation stuff about each character. So Alex, former RCN, Martian Navy, and he just flew a. Does that come in later or not? But anyway, he was a pilot.
He was just sort of merchant pilot,
truck driver.
He was a bus driver for the
movie. Holden, eight parents from Earth. Former military, dishonorably discharged when he went to punch an officer because he refused to blow up Belters, and that's very Holden. Naomi Nagata, very highly educated, possible OPA ties. That's pretty much it. Yeah, very smart, very highly educated.
Yeah, her education gets sort of thrown at her quite a lot in that interrogation. It's like, oh, you're a bit. You know, you're a bit too educated for basically being racist.
She said,
I did well in some aptitude tests and I got a scholarship type thing is what she says. You know, can't remember what the exact word.
Part of what we get is like it does seem like there's more opportunities in the belt for belters than there are on Earth, perhaps, but we've not really seen that yet. But
it's mixed up. Depends where you are.
Shed fakes his medical license and on the run from drug dealers.
So he's a chemist, but he's not a doctor.
which is why that relates back to like he's always more interested in how each drug can get you high rather than what it actually is supposed to treat. And then Amos, they know nothing. they got nothing on Amos.
Amos and Naomi. Almost seem like they could be OPA operatives at this stage. Like,
I don't want to say anything. I would say keep your eye on them too because you're going to learn things. But I don't want to in any way spoil it because discovering
Amos is one of the greatest things about the show.
I'm guessing it's not going to be that straightforward or whatever. But like, they raise the idea: is it romantic? But we've seen not really any evidence that it is romantic.
But not that it isn't either, or at least that it could be sexual and not romantic. We've got nothing on that yet.
There's just questions. There's no answer.
And it could be, even if it was romantic, in the circumstances that they've been in that we've seen, you're not going to be particularly in a romantic mood, are you? You're in a
more, well, exactly.
Not much hand holding in emergency.
I mean, he certainly is very protective of her.
Yep.
You know, when he—that's why he grabs Alex—is because you know he was disparaging Naomi anything.
Why he fights with the Martians when they're trying to put him in the cell?
You're talking
about funny lines as well. He also winds up the Martian guard by talking about the metallic armor suit that they wear over their uniform, and he's saying, crotch itch or ball itch or something, you know, because you can't get into to scratch yourself, you know.
Yeah.
Oh no, then Amos is like, oh, it doesn't matter. They take their balls when they join off.
Yeah. So he's like really needling this guy. Also, now, I'm not sure if this is, but was that actor who played the guard at that point?
Mm-hmm.
Is that the guy that was in one of the Batman movies where he plays? What's the one with the Joker?
Dark Knight.
No, is it? It's Dark Knight, right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You know where they have the scene where the fake policeman assassinate?
No idea. I saw that once.
Yeah. But they have a scene. Well, this actor's quite. He's a good character actor and he's in a lot of stuff. But I think
it always strikes me every time I watch it. He looks like a young Sheen. Like a Charlie, like a young Charlie Sheen.
I keep meaning to look it up. I maybe will. But he's one of the fake policemen in that scene. I think it's the same actor.
Okay.
And he's now in. I think he's quite big in a TV show now as well that I've not seen because it's TV. But I think he's now in a big TV show or something as well. In main cast. And I think he's been in other films as well. Hang on, I'm going to have to look it up while we're on the. Or else it'll just annoy me. IMDb, The Expanse. There we go, that'll do. We're on episode 3. Oh yeah, don't look on IMDb, Chris, because it's basically because it's spoiler city because it starts from the end, as it were.
Oh, the worst thing that can happen when you're watching a TV show and you're wondering who played that character or whatever, and you look it up and you get one of those wikis for the TV show. And they always like you're glancing down for the name, and you always see like current status dead.
Those are the ones.
I mean, what I usually do under those circumstances is just go to the Expanse page rather than the episode.
Yeah,
and that tends to. Yeah, and you never know because like I always assume like something in the review
it could be this guy.
Might be spoiling.
No, it's not him.
Wow. Oh.
Martian crewman, Martian marine.
Would it be guard, like Martian guard or
that's
something?
That's what I'm looking for, yeah. Right. Marine guard or something, but...
Yeah.
Nah, there's not really... Yeah, there's a couple of people it could be, and none of them are him or this guy, so it doesn't matter. Forget about it.
We'll update that next episode.
Yeah, see if I can find anything out about it.
Do we
look at it backwards? Because the guy who I think it is, I know what he is in. Oh, darn, I should have been that way around. Yeah. Anyway, sorry. What were you going to say, Chris?
Is the guy that's doing the interviews? Do we see much more of him? Is he an important character, or is he just a?
I don't think we should answer that.
You mean?
Sorry.
The interrogator guy.
Yeah, the interrogator guy. Yeah.
I think we shouldn't answer that, Hamish.
Yeah, okay. Probably best not to say anymore. He's important on the ship. He is important on the Doniger. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, I just because I kind of enjoyed his screen press. You know, like it was an interesting.
I like it a lot. Yeah.
He's one of those actors that they liked having on board, sort of thing. You know, as it were.
Okay. Good. All I wanted to know is like, do we get to see more? Is he a throwaway character or is he a? Does he have a point? But
well, you could say that. I mean, if you think about the Canterbury crew, you were introduced to lots of people.
Yeah, I know.
We can't see anything, or it's just going to. You know, we're not going to give that away one way or the other, really.
Yeah. I one of the things I did come away thinking about this is that I kind of do want to know what a Mormon comedy night is.
I know, yeah.
Because he sells it, like, properly. And also, I'm just looking at it now. That is a well-ironed shirt. That is...
Did you pick up? I didn't pick this up until three watches through because I'm really bad with names. But when Havelock... is saying yeah, sign me up. He gives the chief's name, not his name.
He gives the captain.
Oh,
yeah. No, I didn't pick up on that until like literally my third watch, and I was like, oh, that's funny. that's why he says like oh, they keep bothering me because sometimes I forget to respond. You know.
Oh yeah, it's Captain Shaddad.
He's signing Captain Shaddad up for spam, basically.
Spam,
Mormon spam.
Oh. What? Maybe. Oh my God! No. I mean, judging from the way that this conversation has gone, it's not going to go to Captain Shaddad, and then she becomes a Mormon and infiltrates the police, and then you know the comedy night gets her. You know, I you know because like Yeah, Mormonism, like, especially from the point of view of being British, is a really weird, like, religion. And
well, we've got a mutual sort of Fetty friend who was in the, I don't want to name like necessarily, but he was in the Mormons and he's written quite a lot about it. He views it very much as a cult that he escaped from.
Oh, okay. I'd be interested to hear some of these readings actually, but writings or whatever. But
I'll link you afterwards.
Yeah, like because it's, to be honest, and I don't want to be like insensitive or like rude when I say this, but to me,
I'm like when you're like, talking about the Chinese.
it's like Mormons and like Scientologists are kind of like Scientologists are like a lot weirder than Mormons, but yeah. Like even still, they sort of like,
well, it's the same. It's the same scam.
Yeah,
they discovered that all the big religions are used in the West as, well, particularly, you know, are used as scams, the tax dodges. That's what 99% of the Catholic Church is about, you know. Mm. And yeah, that's why the Americans, being enterprising people, have all these different religions that pop up.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, I love the new book of the Bible. That's how the Mormon ones. Based, isn't it? Is it a new book of the Bible that's covered or something?
I'm told I'm actually told that one of the best broad references for learning how the Mormons function is South Park. I'm told that they actually
South Park. I knew you were going to say South Park.
You know, like apparently they went out of their way to not. I don't know if that's because, like, if they got it wrong, they would almost certainly get sued. A lot of these religious institutions, the Westboro Baptist Church, actually, they make a lot of their money from people punching them in the face because they sue them. Which is why if you ever see Westboro Baptist Church, I'm like, yeah, they want you to punch them, and it's like,
yeah.
So you have to do it in a.
No, if we're talking about Mormon comedy, Napoleon Dynamite was made by Mormons.
Oh, okay.
You said comedy, that's why then Napoleon Dynamite.
Yeah, yeah, like.
I enjoy it. I think it's very funny.
It's very flat, and I can see the intended comedy. Let's put it that way.
I don't know. I think it might be one of those films I've seen and then immediately forgot it existed.
But there's no swearing in it at all, and the language is very like it got a Mormon feel to it.
It does have a Mormon, like, now that you've mentioned it.
I know it's unfashionable to like Napoleon Dynamite, but I think it's very funny.
No, it's probably fashionable to dislike it. I'm probably the one being the dick, but no.
I'm not saying you're being.
I mean, I watched it and I did enjoy it, but I wouldn't have said it was really funny. It was just clever. And
yeah, you know, it's odd. Sort of odd, funny, and clever together.
Yeah, off kilter. Yeah. Off kilter. I can't find this bloody name of this guy because I can't remember what his character is.
Very frustrating. It's so frustrating when you can't. Yeah.
Because when I watch it, I go, oh, yeah, that guy's good. I wonder what else he is. Because William Fichtner is in The Dark Knight, and I always spot him in it and go, oh, yeah, he's in it. Eric Roberts, you know. Mm.
Is Havelock, so he separates from the group in the end to go down.
He goes to check on the girl that's teaching him. He goes to that district because the girl hears there's trouble in another district, and that's the district where she is.
Because I read that. Now that makes a lot more like sense than because I thought it was just like the scene in the beginning with him with the sex worker and I interpreted that as like he just really genuinely cares about like the OPA, the Belters.
I think he's got. I think he does have genuine interest in them.
I wouldn't say like he's an OPA sympathizer or anything like that, but I think he's a genuine like he's a nice person. He wants to treat people fairly and well.
And he's trying to understand the people that are around him to do his job.
It felt more like
A good way.
It felt more like he was a working class sympathiser rather than an OPA sympathiser.
Similar
to like Miller, as you know, in that regard. Like it's like it doesn't. Whether or not you're an OPA or anything else is sort of irrelevant to the fact that you're just a person with a job getting by, right? Like that's
different with Miller because he's from there. But I get what you're saying, and
it's not political. It's more just moral, I guess, or on a more sort of
and a bit, at least from Miller's point of view, looking at it, naivety. Miller would see naivety there.
Yeah, Miller thinks that Havelock's naive.
Yeah. Well, Havelock is kind of naive.
Well, yeah,
he does. He does. Yeah. You know, you know, he is the second cop, the apprentice cop.
He's his new partner. Yeah.
His new partner. Yeah. So it and like when he's talking to the governor in episode two, I think it is, like he talks to him in a way that is that isn't hugely diplomatic. You know, he just basically straight up says, you know, they all hate you. Like, I don't know. That just feels like something that
basically does say to him, you're treating the people here shittily, and that's, you know, that's why they're.
Actually, while we're on the cops, another thing we do get from this episode is, because again, film noir, Miller is, you know, the detective who's been doing the job for a while. He's disillusioned with it all. He doesn't really care about stuff. The woman cop, I can't remember her name, but she, you know, she says, you know, you've got all these cases on your desk that you don't give a shit about. But we get the sense that something's reawakened in him. He does care about this Julie Malik. Like, he shouldn't, but he does care about this Julie Malik.
He does say something along those lines, doesn't it?
Again, if we're tracking it to like film noir, it's because, you know, he's presented with an actual mystery and he's, you know, he does actually have some detective
the sort of mysterious what's going on. Literally just the word the mystery, I suppose that's what gets him into it. What pulls him in. You know what, I'm just looking here and I don't think it's the same guy. And I'm looking back, 2015 it would be, wouldn't it?
Hang on, we've just got confirmation. It is not the same guy.
Not the same guy. And the guy's name, incidentally, is David Dastmalchian.
That's a great name.
That is a great name. Looking at his face and thinking about who I've just looked at. Oh, yeah, they do this known for thing, don't they? He's in Oppenheimer, but he's in Suicide Squad. He's the polka dot guy. In Suicide Squad, if you've seen that.
I haven't seen that, but the polka dot guy sounds amazing.
He's in Dune, apparently. And some called like Laser, Riddler, Devil but from last year. But forget the whole thing since it's not relevant.
I kind of enjoyed Suicide Squad. I don't think it wasn't that good, but it wasn't as bad as people said. It was alright.
Yeah, it was okay. Mm-hmm. But he's the polka dot guy. Yeah, that's who he is. And that's what... But he's not the same guy that plays the guard. That was a worthwhile Right, so is there anything you want to say, Chris? How do you feel about now that you've seen three episodes and this episode basically starts to unravel all the different conspiracy theories that you've kind of latched onto, which is deliberate, you know, they only show that's what the characters are thinking. You know, you're not making a fool of yourself. You're in position of the characters all the way through.
I'm really getting into it. I'm going to probably watch episode four like tonight.
Great. Good.
I feel it's
the culminating first four episodes. Episode four is the sort of the icing on the cake of all four.
I've said
every episode, but episode four is the one that there's a bigger hook later, but that was the one that hooked me.
I mean, my favorite bit about this was opening up the Martian, you know, our introduction to Martians proper. I like the second one as well, because the second episode I think was the one that sort of it distilled a lot of the stuff, like, because episode one it just threw so much at it threw a lot at you, and then episode two distilled the bits that you were supposed to, you know,
focus on the threads you're supposed to follow.
And then this one almost sort of starts sort of like growing out again like a tree, I guess. Where there's like, okay, so there's this, isn't this? And a lot of it, you know, the characters,
who the players are, sort of thing. You're getting a better handle on, you know, because there is a lot of characters to sort of take in, especially in the first episode.
When you watch things, because some people do and some people don't, when you watch things, do you have favorites? Like favorite characters? Because I very much do. I grow very attached to certain characters.
Yeah, there's a couple of characters that are my favorites, that's for sure.
I think Avisarala.
Yeah, no, she's great. Yeah.
I don't know about the night crew at the moment. They're all.
Who stands I get what you're saying. Like, of the night crew at the moment, who stands out to you the most? Who are you most sort of like.
Well, there's Amos, who looks like he to me is the muscle.
Yeah.
Like he's the hothead jock. You got James Holden, which is like the Commander Shepard. Naomi's interesting, but she's like the enigma. She's the mystery, the mystery guy. Then you've
Scotty,
got
then she's Scotty.
Scotty. Then yeah. I've already forgotten his name. The chemist guy.
Shed.
Yeah, yeah.
He's funny.
Yeah, it's funny.
He's like the comedic. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a comic relief. Yeah.
Because I think when I was watching it the first time through, at this point, I think Naomi was my favorite. That changes. Okay. But at this point, I think where you are, I think Naomi was my favorite. Yeah.
Interestingly, if you think back to episode 1 and 2 and Alex's ability to fly, and then find out that he was basically, you know, find out how good a pilot he is, and then you find out that he basically was a truck driver when he was this marshal member. So it's like, oh. That's a bit of a late. We wasn't a fighter.
It's going ahead a bit, but the sense I get from that is he is a very gifted pilot, but like he has confidence problems.
Maybe.
That's what I get. And when the crunch comes, he can do it.
Yeah, because he does. Yeah. He flies the night through that debris field. Yeah, although they get hit a few times, they don't get completely demolished. Mm. You know, which is obviously what could have happened in that moment.
The thing is, people, they reference this a few times in the show. You're just on a haulage vehicle or something like that. But like, I don't entirely know what the expected skill set of a crew of this is to be. They do put it in perspective. But like, see, because like in today's world, right? Like, you know, okay, you can liken them to truck drivers, right? But a truck driver's salary begins at 50,000. Which is that's a good packet. But then if you start going into specialization for different things, truck drivers are earning six figures a year. Well, like, admittedly,
I suppose you could say they're more like merchant shippers. Mm. That's what they are.
But that's even more. That's even well
because they're individual people working on a crew of a single vessel, not
with with a bit of like oil rig worker thrown in because
they're out and you know
you need a certain personality just to be able to do it in the first place, just be able to cope with the isolation.
Yeah,
being
an Antarctic survey base.
Submariner as well.
Actually, I got this. This reminds me because this is absolutely I find this to be absolutely fascinating. Is quite some time ago. Do you remember when I was putting up audio clips on Gemini?
Mm.
Yeah, I got an email from someone who was saying basically they enjoy the show because they can listen, because they can't enjoy a lot of content online, video content, because they work on an oil rig, so they've got limited bandwidth.
Really?
So they were really enjoying my content because they can just
fucking cool.
Yeah.
I was so busy listening to you, I forgot this was actually being recorded, and I was about to try and check some settings. I haven't updated the PeerTube server yet because it was being used a lot over the weekend by me and some other people, and Chris. But I'm going to take it down sometime this week and upgrade it. And the new version has finally fixed something that I thought should have been there, but apparently it wasn't, which was audio only option.
Yes.
Cool.
So that'll be there for people that don't want to have the entire bandwidth of a 720p or 1080p or whatever video. You can just listen to the podcast, the episodes, just as audio.
And you've already set it to 720 is the video resolution.
My stuff goes at 720, and that's it. But if some people upload, one person really, it's three main uploaders. Ozone tends to do, you know, because he's come from I think it's just because he came from a YouTube thing. I think he puts everything at 1080, 60 frames a second or something, because his videos are way bigger. But I've also, although I have. The other thing I did was I took out, I didn't realize I was doing this, but every time stuff is transcoded, when it's transcoded, I had like a tick list in the configs, and I thought that was, I didn't know exactly how it worked, let's put it that way, and I thought I could choose certain ones, but what I was doing was making too many. So I was making like a 180 and a 240 and all that sort of pixel thing. But it's totally irrelevant. So I've taken off loads of settings. So it didn't make a big difference to the transcoding time for the one I just did, but I think it transcodes the highest one first. And therefore, it can do the other ones more easily because, you know, it's just cutting it down.
I have noticed.
You should find that if you go to watch this video or any of the ones that went up over the weekend of this is Sunday the 13th, we're recording this of October 2024. If you go and look at any videos from this week, you'll see that they all have a lot more display options that disappear by the weekend. So there'll be two or three videos already this weekend that only have like 720, 1080, and maybe 480 or something as options. Maybe only 720, 1080, I can't remember.
Yeah.
But the audio should work soon as well.
Yeah. I think YouTube have actually gotten rid of their 480. But they encode a million different types because like now on the screen, right, it's like every single thumbnail has a video beneath it, which is crazy, like resource wise. You can actually now scroll through an entire video in the thumbnail, and it's like, who on earth is that helping?
When you're just watching, they'll limit how much you can buffer to save bandwidth, which is fucking
annoying.
And they dropped the
Put a cap on it.
Put a cap on this before we get into sidetracking even more.
The rain off my head.
So we have talked about it. So this has been episode 3, Remember the Cant. And next one, it's a big one for us. We're really looking forward to Chris seeing episode 4 and then talking about it. So, so goodbye to Videoland. Thank you, Chris and Drew, and for inviting me into all this.
I like the Chinese, really.
Chris isn't really racist, not against the Chinese at least.
Not against the Chinese, no.
Right. Yeah.